Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is Internet Marketing. And hello, everybody. Welcome to episode 105 of Internet Marketing. I'm with Mr. Kelvin Newman.
Hello, everybody.
And today is a news and tools, isn't it, Kelvin?
Yeah. There was a couple of items of interesting happenings that I wanted to share with you, the lovely listeners.
Starting with Google Bing. Or Google and Bing. Not Google Bing. That would be interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that
Google
would be an interesting merger. That would be a big bit of news, wouldn't it, if they'd merged.
Google merges with Bing. No, just joking, not really. Google and Bing having a bit of a lover's tiff. What's this all about?
Yeah, basically. So what's interesting here is it's kind of been going to and fro over a couple of weeks. But essentially, Matt Cutts has got, you know, on a bit of a warpath, criticizing Bing for copying Google search results. Now, the logic was that someone within the Google team started to notice some weird similarities on certain search terms that they'd been struggling with in Google and been trying out new algorithmic methods to improve the search results for these particular queries. And noticed it was very strange that considering how much trouble they were having solving this issue, quite how easy it seemed to be that Bing were solving the issue in exactly the same way. So what they were suggesting was that somehow they were copying the results. So what they did...
Did they suspect an inside job?
I don't know whether that's what it was, actually. I think, well, whether that was what the accusation was, the way that they tested it was they went out and bought 20 brand new laptops, didn't install anything on there like Chrome or anything like that. They just installed Internet Explorer, the most recent version of that, the Bing toolbar. Told these people to go home. They went to 20 different home addresses and not associated with Google whatsoever and asked them to search for these random strings of letters, the kind of type of phrase that would never naturally be a search query, and then click on certain search results from that. Now, and what they found was that very quickly these search results were then, well, not all of them, but a significant enough proportion of them to feel confident to criticize Bing were then picked up. So what they claimed is, and this is where the kind of matter of some contention is, that Bing were copying their results. Now, what Bing say the case is, what they do is they have installed a toolbar and they're looking at users' traffic and clickstream data and using that to inform their search results. So they're saying, well, you're sort of right, Google. We are sort of copying your search results, but that's not really what we're doing. Instead, we're just looking to see at who our users, what websites they're visiting, and then using that to make our search results better. Now, to what extent 20 people on a laptop can have enough of an influence in a sample size as many as all the data that Microsoft have, I don't know. But it does seem, you know, interesting that they've got that approach. But of course, Google, you know, go for them hammer and tongs, really criticizing for this. But then, of course, that opens up the whole backlash against that, because Google are collecting a significant amount of data on their own toolbar. And the claim was, well, Bing, you've got your toolbar here, you've got your data that you're collecting. None of the users who are using it realize that that information is being passed back to Microsoft. And if they did know that, then they might not have signed up or used the services that send this data back.
Hang on, I'm confused. Yep. Whose toolbar?
Well, basically, there's a couple of different things in place, but basically all kinds of browsers, toolbars, and the like. In the terms and conditions of those, buried away is the fact that they own the right to that data. So if you visit, if Andy, on your computer, you go and visit a website, that then sends that message back to Microsoft or back to Google, if you've got the Google toolbar, and lets them know that you're using that. Now, what Google were criticizing for is saying to Microsoft, well, the people who have your toolbar in place don't know that that's the case. They don't know that they're sending back that data. But And then, of course, Microsoft's response to that was, well, you do exactly the same with the Google toolbar. To which they say, no, we're very clear about it. It's not hidden away in all our terms and conditions, which actually it is. You know, like several years ago, they had a much more transparent, big red, you know, we're taking all this data. Please don't, you know, be angry with us for it. But actually, over the times, that had rolled back. So really, in some ways, it's a storm in a teacup in terms of, you know, search engineers at the two different companies having a bit of a snipe at each other and a bit of rivalry there, which is, you know, in some ways a little bit childish. But what I think it really hints at is a more underlying issue that there's all this data that we're providing ISPs. There's big stuff about, there was big problems with BT collecting that data in the UK, that kind of clickstream data.
Yeah.
Google are doing it. Facebook, you know, you wouldn't be surprised if they're doing that kind of data capture as well. And the fact is, probably in most cases, even if they are doing it, they're perfectly right to, because we have, as users, when we sign up for those terms and conditions, allow them the right to do those things. But do you ever read all the terms and conditions, Andy?
Well, no, it's funny, actually, because I've always... I mean, we've got some very basic terms and conditions for our business, and we don't have any small print, but I've often thought how much fun it would be if, instead of having small print at the end, you had big print in a great big fat, bold font. Yeah. Like, we will take your data and do something with it. But well, I see the problem, I mean, no one reads terms and conditions. No. Well, some people do.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the interesting thing about when Google were called up about it was the fact that there was the short versions of the terms and conditions that didn't mention it, but it was then referred to in another term. So basically, you had to go through, like, you know, it wasn't like you just had to scroll down the page a bit. It's you really had to jump through hoops to see these kind of terms and conditions where you give these things away. And I think there really could be a backlash against this at some point in time. There's kind of all these concepts of net neutrality and, you know, confidentiality when you're online. And yeah, I think this is probably the opening salvo of what will probably be an ongoing battle.
Don't get me started on net neutrality.
Yeah, well,
there's a big story with BT and net neutrality, isn't there? But we'll skip over that today. Yes. Let's go on to the second thing then. Was it Twitter breaking a record during the Super Bowl?
Yeah, so fairly recently there was, you know, Super Bowl on in the States, and that, you know, broke all kinds of Twitter records for the amount of people tweeting per minute of the Super Bowl being on, which is kind of a real benchmark, because you get these events that trigger off, you know, big uplifts in Twitter usage. And the 2011 Super Bowl seems to have been, you know, one of those high watermarks. Now, what I think's really...
Now, just for people that aren't American, what, just tell us what the Super Bowl
is. The Super Bowl is, it's the kind of... It's
not a very large bowl, salad bowl.
No. I mean, But as an Englishman, I'm by no means an expert on these matters. But I have stayed up a couple of years and watched it, which is probably more than most Brits have. It's the culmination of the American football season. So
it's a bit like the cup final. The cup final in England.
So, you know, that was going on. Huge event in America. Huge amount of people tweeting about it, particularly about the adverts, which is the interesting thing about the whole Super Bowl phenomena, is that almost more people talk about the adverts that occur between the play as they do about the play itself. But what I think is really interesting about this is the fact that most people think of social media, particularly Twitter, but, you know, most social media, most web-based environments is still being quite geeky. But the fact is, things like Super Bowl, things like the X Factor in the UK, and, you know, all these types of very mainstream mass cultural events that occur, they're actually influencing the use of these events that are going on. So I think it's really interesting. At the one hand, you've got Twitter and social networks in its broadest sense being involved in the Middle East political unrest at the moment, and the revolutions that are going on there, so very much having a kind of a positive social impact.
But you say that.
Well, yeah, you know, yeah, the, yeah. I won't get into the
there are negative sides as well, apparently.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't by any means claim to fully understand the situation there, but many people are claiming that the tools enabled the kind of revolution to gain a footing that perhaps it wouldn't have done, and whether that revolution was right or not, at least it enabled the people to connect in a way that they wouldn't have done previously. But at the same time, you've got people using it to talk about the most mainstream, most old media events of anything. You know, the Super Bowl is about as old school as it can get in the world of old media, because it's lots of millions and millions of people sat watching one particular thing on one particular channel and with particular adverts associated with that. That's about as kind of old fashioned media as it gets, really. So, yeah, it's just, I think it's easy to kind of assume that social technologies are kind of very democratizing, very, you know, about creating long tails and niches of, you know, small groups of people. But it's also as much about kind of, you know, enabling us to have conversations that we, you know, would have had down the pub or would have had, you know, on the, at the water cooler, you know, anyway.
You mentioned something very interesting there. You mentioned they were tweeting about the adverts. Now, do you mean the adverts that came on in the breaks, or do you mean the adverts that were whizzing around the side of the field?
In terms of, you know, this is, yeah, in the Super Bowl, because it is such a widely watched event in the States, the gaps between plays when they kind of cut to a commercial break are watched by, you know, probably it's the most watched television event in the States of the year. So therefore it has a huge value, and therefore it's very expensive. And because it's very expensive and it's watched by a huge amount of people, a kind of phenomena has emerged that lots of people do specific Super Bowl adverts and, you know, really put in a huge amount of effort. And that kind of gets a bit of an arms race going then, when most of the people are trying to really cut through and be the most talked about advert during Super Bowl, that you then find that you get this kind of, you know, the most inventive adverts of the year all launching within sort of 10, 15 seconds of each other. So that's why it tends to, you know, it's a cultural phenomenon where people talk about that anyway. But as soon as you add the means to broadcast that via Facebook or Twitter, it only, you know, increases that kind of conversation that people would be having in their own living room anyway.
Interesting. So Twitter's like sort of, and I have to use the word boosting.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Definitely, because in the US that means to be mugged, doesn't it?
Okay.
To be boosted, I think. But in England it means to just to give some extra impetus.
Yeah.
So is Twitter there giving some extra impetus to traditional marketing?
Yeah, and I think also as a, you know, okay, well, what's the marketing angle in this? Well, that is the kind of, the fact that these events are always triggering lots of conversations. You know, there are predictable calendar-based events that we know, you know, over a couple of years have always been, you know, hot spots of activity on social networks. You should be thinking about how those types of hot spots that are relevant to your business, can you work that into a plan? So it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe the Super Bowl was perhaps a bit too far down that line, but, you know, in the search industry, you know that there are certain search conferences, and when those search conferences are going on, there's more tweets on those days than there would be on a normal day.
Yeah.
So therefore, maybe I ought to be trying to do something with a campaign on that particular day, you know, and it's just that kind of, I think there's inspiration we can take from these kind of things.
It's riding the wave of real timeness.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Now, what have Nokia been up to?
Well, Nokia, perhaps not as well known in the, well, I think they are pretty well known in the States as well, but very much a kind of a big European mobile handset manufacturer. Very much the leader in that sector for, you know, pretty much since day one of mobile phones. Now, they've been getting into, despite still being probably one of the biggest handset manufacturers in the world, are really suffering from a lack of direction and momentum at the moment, to the extent that although they do still have a significant market share, they're not growing at the rate of iPhones, they're not growing at the rate of particularly Android. And now this is interesting because I think in the circles I move in, it's all about the iPhone. But I think in the population as a whole, Android's really starting to get a huge foothold in the smartphone market. Now, basically, What they've done is they've brought in a new CEO, a chap called Stephen Elop. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce his surname, so apologies, but it's E-L-O-P. Mm-hmm. And he has, there's been a leaked, and that's me doing leaked in inverted commas, memo.
He's holding his quote fingers up, yes, when he does that.
So there's a leaked memo that he sent around to all of the Nokia team talking about their burning platform as the kind of the short quote that's been associated with this. But basically what he has been saying is that they are, and this is the extended metaphor here in the memo, that they're on a kind of, if you imagine, an oil platform and there's fire all around them, and the only way they can get out of this situation that they're in is to jump into the ice cold water and to have the shock of that and to deal with that. And lots of people have been giving him a huge amount of credit for, you know, acknowledging that this inertia and difficulty that they're having and the way that they're going to have to change things. It's anticipated that they will probably get into bed with Microsoft for Windows, you know, their Windows Mobile 7. But I mean, it does seem strange to me, people kind of really heaping praise on this guy for stating the obvious. You know, he's been bought into a struggling company and he's been parachuted in, widely expected to shake things up, and then he releases a memo shaking things up. Do you know what I mean? It's, for me, it kind of did seem a bit of an anti-news, but lots of people are talking about it. I mean, I've never been a Nokia user. I've always been Sony Ericsson until I switched to the iPhone. I mean, did you ever really use Nokia?
I'm just trying to think, actually. I don't think I've ever had a Nokia. I'm like you. It's been Sony Ericsson. Yeah. I can't remember what my previous ones were. Might have been a Philips or something. Obscure Philips, but, you know, I don't think it was a Nokia.
Yeah, and this is the struggle that they're having, really, because, you know, they're just not... I you know, in the past, I could have named a number, you know, back when Nokia were at their peak, you know, their four-digit numbers, you know, like a 10 or whatever the various models were back in the day. At that point in time, you could always name them, and you could always, you know, I could tell you all of my friends who are Nokia users. Now I know one person in the office who has a Nokia. Most of the people have either got iPhones, some of the nice new Sony Ericssons, or kind of, you know, random phones for people who aren't necessarily into phones.
Why do we think they're losing their way? Is it something to do with the essence of the smartphone market?
Well, I think the way it's framed in this memo, which I do think there's definitely some, you know, legs in this, is that what Android isn't about a manufacturer. It's about a kind of ecosystem and, you know, the kind of the apps and the marketplace and all that kind of thing. And all the phones just kind of buy into that ecosystem. And Apple, although they have their own ecosystem and it's very closed, it's still the same, that there's this kind of, almost with an iPhone, you're not buying the iPhone, you're buying the App Store and, you know, all the iTunes interface. And the same with, you know, when you get an HTC, you're not actually getting an HTC, you're getting a Google Android phone. So Nokia, although they've made attempts in this kind of area, they haven't really got it absolutely nailed there. Now, whether that means they should just jump on board with someone else, I'm not entirely sure, because there will always, I think, Apple's approach is, and, you know, everyone knows we're fanboys of Apple on the show, but it's very closed, and that's not good for many people. In some ways, that's what makes Apple good, is because it sort of works together pretty well, because it's a closed system. There's no...
Easy to control.
Yeah, and I think Google are trying to at least be the extreme opposite of that. I don't think they are, but they're at least positioning themselves there. So that leaves you in a very difficult situation. You have the kind of, it all works perfectly together, closed garden, or it's a free reign, we're not going to restrict you in any way with Google. Where does that then leave you if you're, you know, Windows Mobile or even Nokia there? So I think it's widely expected that Nokia and Windows will get together and try and collaborate in some way, shape or form. But, you know, it's difficult because it's kind of competing marketplaces rather than competing handsets.
Time will tell.
Yes, very much so.
Time will tell.
And finally, a few words about Brighton SEO.
Yeah, well, those of you who are long-term listeners will remember in the past I've mentioned a kind of, well, it started off as very much a kind of gathering of search marketers here in the UK, in Brighton, the city where we're based. And it's kind of snowballed from there. So we started off, it was beers. Then it was, we hired a room in a pub where we had a couple of talks and then we had the beers. And then last time we had half a day in a kind of community space that we used and then went off to get some beers. But we've really, you know, at all those events, it's been standing room only. We've had to turn people away. I know at the last event, Andy, you came along and, you know, you had to sit on the floor. So it's the kind of,
it was very hot, I seem to remember.
yes.
And I stood by the door, I think, most of the time.
So, yeah, we're, our we've really kind of gone, okay, well, this is clearly something that's going very well. So they're free conferences that where you get the kind of people who would talk at the conferences that normally cost $600, $700, $800, you know, $1,500 sometimes, these conferences. And because, you know, by virtue of the podcast and by virtue of, you know, meeting these people, I'm able to encourage them to come down to an event where the tickets are free. So we've arranged the next one of those. It's happening on April 1st, so April Fool's Day.
It's not a joke, by the way.
No, this is it, you know. But I'm hoping that'll at least give the presenters a couple of easy laughs when they're putting, you know, starting off their presentation. But yeah, April 1st was the day, so that's a Friday. I know.
I said I was coming down to talk, but I was just kidding. Who's the next speaker?
So yeah, I mean, I know there's a huge chunk of the listeners aren't based in the UK, and if you are based in the UK, Brighton is a long way to come. But what I will say is, if you are in any way, shape or form local to us, it is well worth coming on. It's going to be a really good day of speakers, of people I really respect and really, really think that they know what they're talking about, followed by kind of a decamp to the local hostelry for some well-earned beverages by that point as well. So I mean, if people are interested, they're local, we've actually got a new website that's coming up for it at the moment. It's in the process of being launched, so it might be launched or it might not, depending on my schedule when this episode goes out. But if you are interested in attending the event, you should go along to brightonseo.com and either apply for a ticket or register your interest, so we'll send you the details when the tickets come through. So I just thought, for those of you in the southeast, in London, or maybe actually pretty much anywhere, because Gatwick is right on top of Brighton, so cheap to be on. Actually, the irony being that someone coming down from London might end up paying more for a ticket than someone coming from continental Europe if they fly into, you know, get the
cheap
ticket.
Oh, God, our train prices, yeah.
Yeah, but there you go. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that in terms of if people are interested in that.
Dare we even entertain the thought that we might be able to live stream it, or is that just getting too much?
Well, I mean, yeah, we did do a bit of that last time and it worked reasonably well. One thing I do think we're going to do is we are going to be trying to capture as much of the audio from the show as we possibly can.
Yeah, so I think it's easy just to capture the audio, isn't it?
Yeah,
and make it a little show as
well. Yeah, so we will probably have some of the highlights of that coming up in, you know, well, a couple of months time from now.
Yeah, excellent. Well, I think that wraps it for today. So it's goodbye from me, Andrew White,
and goodbye from me, Kelvin Newman,
and we'll see you next time on Internet Marketing, brought to you by Site Visibility at sitevisibility.com. goodbye. Well, that's it for today. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us on the internet at www.internetmarketingpodcast.org, where you'll find show notes, links, and instructions on how to subscribe. We would absolutely love to get feedback, comments, and questions from you. If you want to send an email, send it to kelvin.newman@sitevisibility.com. Also, feel free to comment on the website. And if you'd like to use our voice line number, if you're outside of the UK, it's +44 1273 256 150. If you're inside the UK, it's 01273 256 150, and you can leave a voice comment or question and we'll play it on the show. Also, we would absolutely be delighted if you would give us a rating on iTunes itself. Well, that's it for now. Andy White signing off until next week on Internet Marketing.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.